I'm the chair of the North American Regional At-Large Group, which means I actually represent you all in terms of internet policy. And I'm sure most people don't even know that such a thing exists. And that's why I'm here to talk to you. It's NARALO, the North American Regional At-Large Organization. And it is a chartered regional body of the Internet Corporation of Assigned Names and Numbers. I was elected about a year and a half ago to this post. I replaced Bo Brendler, who worked for Consumer Reports. He came into it with consumer issues in mind. I came into this work from the cybercrime angle and internet user abuse angle. And that's how I got involved in the policy creation. What I've seen in the year and a half since is a real lack of participation from all the different communities that the internet is supposed to reach. Now, ICANN manages the technical aspects of the domain name system. The entire internet relies on this organization to manage the technical details. They are required by their mandate to accept input from the entire internet community globally. They are also under a mandate to ensure that the internet reaches everybody globally equally. And from my experience, the visually impaired community and the blind community are not being represented within the structure. So I have launched a number of initiatives to correct this. I'm also reaching out to different types of communities, including the deaf community, Native Americans, many other communities I don't feel are properly represented. I want you to participate at this level, and the participation is completely free. There are no membership fees whatsoever. You don't even have to know how the internet works, and I'm sure that many of you do. What you really need to bring to the table are your concerns. And I know for a fact that this community has come up with some extremely innovative ways to use the internet, and I also want to hear about that, and I want the rest of the internet policy community to hear about that as well. And I want them to see the example that you're using and see the things that you're doing. They also, at ICANN, they actually don't have any visually impaired staff working there. That is one thing that I would like to correct as well. I am going to push for them to bring somebody in from the community as a full-time staff person. They have headquarters in Los Angeles, and they have a satellite office in Washington, D.C. So if you guys know people in those areas who you think are qualified for this type of position, and the position doesn't even exist yet, but I'm going to do what I can to make sure, you know, they follow up on it and we get some details. But if you guys have ideas, you can send me resumes, names, whatever.
It would be good if you had a job description that you could send.
Well, here's the thing. Let me ask you what the job description would be. Because what this person would be doing, in my mind, would be conducting outreach to the visually impaired community and making sure they get all the things that they need in terms of internet compliance so that they have somebody on staff there who is from the community, understands the issues.
Now, in terms of internet compliance, what do you mean?
What I mean is actual compliance in terms of accessibility for the visually impaired community, in terms of getting the websites within the industry accessible to the visually impaired community.
When you say within the industry...
Right, I'll get to that, yeah. So obviously it's impossible to get every single website in the world compliant. You can't get every website in the world to do anything, period. What I'm talking about is the governance structures, ICANN itself, and the different types of bodies that run the technical aspects of the internet and administer the policy of the internet, make sure that their websites are accessible to the visually impaired community and are compliant. And I can tell you right now, because we tested it using some public software that we've been using, and they're not compliant. And they were claiming that they were compliant, so we want to fix that as soon as possible. On the second level, I want to make sure that the industry players, the people who sell domain names, they're called registrars. And
like Namecheap.
Exactly.
Exactly. And GoDaddy.
Exactly. I want to make sure that they are compliant. And one of the things that we can do as the policy advisory at large body is write into their contracts that they have to be compliant. In terms of actual work, I mean, some of the things that we do is we select, review, and appoint board members to ICANN's board of directors. We author policy that, you know, goes through different channels to become, you know, official regulation. We review the execution of regulation to make sure that it's actually working properly and that there are no ethical abuses. And we actually have a lot of influence and capability to make sure that these things are working the way that they're supposed to.
You said you tested things and that they weren't accessible. Who did the testing and how did you determine whether something was accessible?
One of my colleagues used a service. I can't remember the name of the service offhand, but it's a web service that you put the website into this program, this interface, and it tells you whether or not it's accessible to visually impaired people.
I will tell you that's probably not a good way of testing.
Great. Well, this is what I need to know. Great.
Because a lot of those services, there are things that they say may be accessible that are not, and vice versa. So I would never trust any kind of a tool.
I guess I want to understand, first of all, because I don't, how the visually impaired community approaches the internet. And I think that at that point we can start a discussion about what it really means to be accessible and compliant.
Well, you know, that discussion is fairly broad-based. We have maybe 20 people in this room right now. You've got to get at least 20 answers. What's accessible to one person is never accessible to another. All those, like I said, you've been through probably like a 504, 508 testing engine. They come up with a code. That doesn't necessarily mean that's really accessible. I'll give you an example. I was on an email list and someone was saying, yeah, is this website accessible on my PDA? And someone said, well, no, you mean your PDA is not running in the browser, it's going to make it accessible to you. And the person said, well, that's not what I consider to be accessible. So that whole conversation hinges on what, you know, the person who's holding the conversation considers to be accessible.
But having said that, there certainly are generally agreed upon things that make websites basically accessible. Things like alt text tags and lots of things like that. So I would think that, you know, if we could get a couple of people who, or you may find that there's a group already doing this sort of thing, and there's the WC3, W3C, that's been looking at web accessibility ever since the web was conceived. You know, there are lots of levels from which to look at it. A lot of websites, if not the majority, are less than perfect from our standpoint. But there are also very good websites that meet our requirements for the most part. And I think it's fairly easy to look at a website and say, you know, does this website developer seem to have even made any attempt to make this website accessible? And for a lot of them, the answer is no.
Well, there's usability as well as accessibility,
okay,
too.
Right.
And that's
good.
Another distinction that you have to make. I mean, the other thing I think that you have to be mindful of is that what may make a website accessible for us may actually, if you don't subscribe to general web accessibility standards, then it may be inaccessible to somebody else with a different disability. There are things which we find helpful that aren't necessarily going to be helpful to somebody with a whole, you know, with a mobility impairment, for example. I would say, I mean, have you looked at the W3C standards as an example? That's just one example, but it's probably the one of the best known.
Right.
Tech 2.0 AA is kind of considered the standard.
So they develop the standards, but not necessarily they police around or they try to influence the policy a little bit, but they do not really get into making sure the websites are accessible. I mean, they definitely have created fantastic standards, but the issue has been, how do you make sure the developers follow it? How do you make sure the requirements, when the websites are built, the requirements are part of it? That never happens.
I mean, these are the kind of discussions that we need within the policy space. And I think that, yes, you're not going to be able to make everybody follow the rules, but there are some people we can make follow the rules, like the people who are contracted to ICANN. If there are acceptable standards that you folks like, we can make sure that they have to follow them as part of their contract.
Who does contract with ICANN?
These are all the registrar companies. He mentioned the Enoms, the GoDaddies. These are the people who sell domain names. They're also contracted parties called registries, and these are bodies that administer the entire .com space, the entire .net space, the entire .org space. So they would also be a place where the regulations could be implemented because they could enforce the regulations within their own registries. So you could have, say, they could say, everybody who wants a .org, you know, needs to follow this baseline.
Anybody who has a website that, say, has .org in the title has to follow this baseline. I mean, do they really have the power to enforce those kind of standards?
Well, I mean, this is where it gets complicated. I mean, there are almost 200 million domain names now in the world.
Right.
You know, and getting all the different parties to follow all the regulations, it's a lot of work. I mean, I can tell you from the cybersecurity and abuse end of it, it's a lot of work. When things work the way they're supposed to, it makes a lot of people happy.
Excellent start, because if you start from there, I'm sure you will be able to hit many.
But what kind of enforcement power do you have?
Because of my investigations, certain contracted parties have lost their contract. because they failed to follow the contract. So these were companies that were actually, you know, partners with internet criminals, that were actually benefiting from internet crime financially. And we've actually been able to get some of these companies bounced so they couldn't sell domain names anymore. They definitely don't always listen to me, and there are plenty of people within the political sphere that hate me because of what I do. And you're going to run into the same problem, but the thing is that some of the problems will get fixed if you're at the table. You know, I and my colleagues will make sure that that happens.
Garth has sent, you know, some literature to me. There's an application form, right? Mm-hmm. So it would be something that we would submit an application, a bylaw application. You guys would consider it?
Yes.
Is that how it would work?
Yeah. And I can guarantee you guys will go through the process with no problem.
So I think probably one of the, like, the next step for us is to see how we want to proceed, who we want, you know, whether we... Because I assume you want one representative, not an entire group.
Well, you apply as a group, right. You're accepted as a group, and then any of your members can participate. Usually there's two contacts. There's a primary and secondary contact. You know, these are the people who just handle the administrative responsibilities for the group. But any member of the group can participate in our teleconferences and come to the meetings and represent VBUG.
Now, where do you have your meetings?
This is where it gets interesting. The meetings are in a different country every 3 months. The next one is in Singapore in March. There's one in London in June. And there's another one in Los Angeles in September.
And how do these get financed?
There is a limited amount of funding for travel for representatives. But what we have occasionally, we have summits and we have general assemblies. Now, we're having a summit in London. And that means that all the current members of Neuralo are going to get travel funding. All the representatives from all of our groups in North America, U.S. and Canada get funding to go to the London meeting. So, and then when the meeting is in Singapore in next month, all the Asia Pacific groups get funding to go. Depending on where it is, that's how we work it out. And we also have working group chairs. So if you're the chair of a working group, sometimes there's funding to go to those meetings. And we have different committees. Like there's a nominating committee where they vet all the applicants to become board members of ICANN. They get funding for every meeting. It's like the more you get involved, the more the opportunities come up. If you become what we call an at-large structure, I will help you find some other organization that would help you guys get funding to go to these. You know, there's probably support groups out there that will be willing to fund you to these meetings.
I would also hope that you're reaching out to the two national organizations of blind people, the American Council of the Blind and the National Federation of the Blind.
I will tomorrow.
They both have segments directly involved with internet accessibility. And the one other one that I've mentioned would be the American Foundation for the Blind in New York, because they've done a lot of research into web accessibility and have some resources on their own website on that topic.
Anything that increases the awareness of and the needs of, you know, our constituents is obviously a positive.
You know, in my position, I have the authority to kind of call for sessions at the international meetings where we would bring somebody in from the WC3 and we could address issues and we can bring them in and we can even have sessions at the meetings where we talk about development and thinking forward in development.
One of the things I would also suggest is that one of the things you set up at your meetings is literally have a user come in and demonstrate why something's not accessible.
Exactly.
What I have found is that I can talk for a week about the fact that a website's not accessible or is accessible and why, but if I'm literally sitting in front of somebody and I show them, they get it a lot faster and a lot more clearly.
The teleconferences we have, we actually do have various demonstrations at each one. I'd love for somebody to come onto these calls and give a demonstration.
Are they video calls? Because you really need to see this.
They're both. Yeah, they're video and audio.
What do you use for software?
They use Adobe Connect.
Which probably is not
It probably isn't. I mean, this is all important information.
Yeah, no, that's why I was asking. It does.
Right. We could do it with sighted help on an Adobe Connect call.
Yeah, because I think most developers don't have a clue that we even use computers, never mind how we use computers. Something as simple as, you know, the way that images are not tagged and so forth isn't often understood until they hear what a screen reader does with that.
One of your long-term goals has to be education of web developers. My wife teaches at a nearby school that does web development as one of their majors. They do not teach accessibility. The way I think you have to do this most easily is to go to one of the certification boards that okays colleges that they conform to certain standards. So if you get them to include in their web standards that you have to teach accessibility, you start to see changes gradually happen when people graduate.
One of the registries that ICANN has a contract with is EDUCAUSE, which runs .edu. All the universities are certified through them for their websites. And we could start with them, build out from there.
Well, this is very interesting.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
We will be in touch.
Please.